This program is supported by a grant from Seagate Technology. Seagate is a worldwide supplier of disk drives for PCs and servers and innovations for products like the Microsoft Xbox, digital video recorders, and digital jukeboxes. Information is at Seagate.com. It's Friday, February 6th, 2004, 10:04 a.m. on the central coast of California, and it's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name's Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on Geek Speak, we're talking about handheld devices with our portable geek, Chris Dunphy. During the second half of the show, I'll welcome you to join our conversation. The numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Or you can go to geekspeak.org, click on The Geeks, and then send a message. I'll be giving out that contact information in about a half an hour, and we invite your participation. This is Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air room with me are geeks: John Tracy, owner and operator of FeltonGames.com; Miles Elam, programmer and student of American literature; Sean Cleveland, technical marketing communications manager for Transmeta; and Chris Dunphy, director of competitive analysis for Palm Source. Geeks, welcome to Geek Speak.
Good morning.
Sean, or Miles, can you say that again?
Good morning.
It's so good to see all of you. It's nice to have a full house of geeks. I really appreciate all of you being here.
It's been way too long.
It's wonderful. It's nice and confusing for everybody, but I'm going to do a little introductions real quick so we just get the voices. Sean.
Good morning.
John.
Hello.
Chris.
Good morning.
And Miles, as we have heard.
Hello.
Before we start a discussion about handheld devices, and if anyone's interested in what kind of handheld devices we're talking about and what they look like, go to geekspeak.org, click on today's show, which is a picture of Chris, and you see a plethora of things that he dumped out last night for all of us to inspect and look at. And we'll be talking about those handheld devices in just a minute. But first, we're going to do the news, and we're going to start with Sean. Sean?
Yes, this week was big news for Intel. They cranked out a new version of the Pentium 4. The last version was codenamed Northwood. This one is codenamed Prescott. It now reaches 2.8 gigahertz, 3 gigahertz, and 3.2 gigahertz. The difference is they'll be distinguished by markings on the chip with the letter E.
And they'll probably cost more.
Probably. So 3.4 gigahertz won't be available until March. A lot of big changes to the chip, though. The biggest of which is a pipeline change. So they've gone from 20-stage pipeline to 31-stage. So all things being equal, increasing the pipeline stage, well, what it gives you is higher megahertz potential. Okay. So they're talking 4 gigahertz by the end of the year.
Now, I heard some metrics this week, I think it was from Miles, that the Prescott processor is not doing as well in benchmarks as we would hope.
Like I said, going to a 31-stage pipeline, what happens is when code is getting sent through the processor to be processed, it's got to go through 31 different stages.
Wow.
And if... What the processor does is it's predicting which code it's going to be processing next because it's doing so much work. Well, let's say the user says, well, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to do something else. It mispredicts. That costs the processor time.
Okay.
So code has to go all the way back to the beginning. So all things being equal, if you put a 20-stage pipeline, Pentium 4 Northwood, up against a 31-stage Prescott, the Prescott would be slower. But all things are not equal because Intel has done a lot of other work.
Okay.
Like they've increased the branch prediction unit. It's more effective now. They've doubled the cache. It now has 1 megabyte of cache on the processor. And they've increased the multimedia support by adding some new extensions. So
to the instruction set?
Yeah. So if you take speed processors of the two generations, you're going to see about a 14% increase in performance.
All right.
Well, that's what Intel's saying.
Right, of course. Well, we'll see how those numbers turn out in the real world. Thank you. Thank you, Sean, for that. John, hi.
Hi. Good morning. I've got the latest MER, Mars Exploration Rover update.
Good.
Spirit, which was the ailing rover that a couple weeks ago went down with a memory problem, is now up and running, and tomorrow they hope it's going to grind on the rock that it was about to grind on before it had its problem.
When you say grind, you mean chew up and use get bits of?
Yeah, it's got a
small, not like dance.
No,
okay.
It's got a small tool on it that it grinds away a surface of the rock so it can expose the the fresh rock, as it were, down below. Also, Opportunity rolled off. That's the second lander. Did a little driver's test where they rolled away from the lander, and then they do a couple little sachets and a loop. So it's gone a total of almost 10 meters, and it's about 2 meters away from the landing platform. So it is out exploring.
I bet NASA's really glad they paid for that extended warranty on Spirit. That's paying off.
I think the Dell guy should have been. I think you're right.
On-site service.
On-site service. So it's kind of interesting that a machine having all these memory problems, they're able to fix it remotely, and it comes back online. I mean, why can't software vendors do that with operating systems?
In our dreams.
Right.
No, if NASA supported your PC, you'd be in pretty good shape.
Yeah, of course, it would be a little more expensive.
But, I don't know. This is a one-third success ratio going to Mars. So
that's true. And also,
they're beating the odds on this.
If NASA delivered a laptop to your computer to you, then you'd be in good shape. It's just the problem is you'd lose a third of the ones.
The hardware that NASA uses, these have 128K of RAM and a...
256.
256,
and it's about a $50,000 price tag on the 256 megabytes of...
Megabytes.
Megabytes of
kilobytes.
Flash RAM.
Megabytes.
Megabytes of flash RAM. 256 megabytes of flash RAM.
Oh, okay.
Cost you about $69 on eBay, or if you're a government contractor, about $50,000.
Yeah,
of course, it can last the extreme temperatures on Mars and massive amounts of radiation.
In space.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much, John. Chris, hi.
Yeah, some news on the cool new technology front. This is something that's been in the pipeline for a long time, and it's getting a little bit closer. Philips this week has shown off an ultra-thin, flexible electronic ink display that you can actually roll up.
When you say electronic ink, what do you mean?
Electronic ink has been a long-sought-after fantasy of basically having an ink-like experience. So rather than having a screen that's backlit, it's more like paper. There's just writing on it, and it's you can have a really perfect contrast of black on white or color on white.
Not like an LCD where you have kind of a grayish color and black, but actual white, like paper effect with
white,
black ink.
A real white and black effect.
The color and pictures are kept in place by an electrical charge.
Yeah, by an electrical charge embedded inside the surface. And so electronic ink displays are starting to come out embedded on glass. And the next thing beyond that is then making them flexible. So you could actually have like an electronic newspaper. You'd have a sheet of paper in sci-fi time that's coming soon. You'd have a sheet of paper that'd just be your newspaper every day. And you could carry it with you and roll it up. And the real thing is you could roll them, but just don't fold them. Folding is bad.
Sci-fi time, is that kind of like dog years and human years?
Well, you know, we're living in sci-fi time right now, so you know, and it's like
so. So who released recently this?
This would be Philips who showed off their latest prototype of a rollable display.
Now, have you seen this on a show at all?
I've seen several of the shows I've been at. I've seen electronic ink demoed and flexible screens demoed, and they're getting closer every time.
And what's the power consumption like on these things?
They have really good power consumption because they don't need a light, because they just use ambient light. So if you could see paper, you'd be able to see these screens. They don't need to have a special backlight.
Is their refresh rate fast enough such that you could do video on them, or are they not designed for that?
Probably eventually, but for the first several years worth of them coming into production, they will be mostly suitable for text displays.
We're talking about paper replacement kind of
thing.
Great. Thank you very much for that fascinating information. Miles?
President George W. Bush on Monday proposed a $2.4 trillion federal budget that specifically is supposed to boost spending on information technology and computer crime investigation.
Right there for a second, I was like, you got the wrong show. But okay, so specifically it's focused on, say that again?
Well, one thing that it covers is information technology and computer crime investigation. For example, the Office of Homeland Security, I'm still not getting over that, but Homeland Security National Cybersecurity Division. And they were the federal government or the federal agency that was officially responsible for distributing information about the SOBIG and the blaster virus.
And probably my Doom virus.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they're going to receive $80 million.
So more funding for antivirus and probably anti-hacking.
Right. Total spending is going to be $59.8 billion, up from $59.1 billion requested last year.
Not a big change, but...
Still pretty high, and basically it's a widening deficit of $521 billion, and it's going to increase this Homeland Security spending by 10%.
Okay, Miles, do you have personal thoughts on this? I'm not looking at the news story, but just what your thoughts are from a geek American literature student.
I think the money could be spent in better ways.
Thank you very much. Sean, hi.
It could go in my pocket.
So, I need a new pair of sneakers.
I need a new gadget. So Windows XP 64-bit edition, Microsoft has announced that it is now going to be offered to the public as a preview for 360 days, downloadable for free, or you can order it on CD-ROM for a small shipping and handling fee.
Why are they doing that?
I guess they kind of want to get the industry and businesses to start adopting it, working with it.
It's interesting. The idea of getting free Microsoft operating systems just kind of seems strange. But to seed the market with a 64-bit operating system to compete with Linux, basically the only other operating system out there, makes sense. I thought it was a long time before the next version came out. Now, is this Leghorn or is this just...
Longhorn.
Longhorn, excuse me.
Leghorn.
Yeah, I think this is built upon...
Leghorn. So it could be some new
Actually, no, it's not. No. This is Windows XP.
This is the current XP.
Yeah,
this kind of
the 64
recompiled, basically, for...
A lot of the drivers are not there. Companies are now, I think, really trying to get the drivers out there. VIA has announced that they have new Hyperion 4 and 1 drivers with 64-bit extension support. ATI has not released new drivers. I don't know about NVIDIA.
So basically, you could get a machine like an AMD.
It's got to be an AMD Athlon 64 or Opteron processor-based system.
And then you can get this Windows XP download, and then you can't have a video card because you'll have no drivers.
Well,
you can. It just goes to 32-bit.
I would expect the drivers support will be out there shortly.
Okay.
If it's not already.
Okay, we got to get a 64-bit machine now. Just, you know, it's a matter of when you
get.
So right now, the only reason you need 64 bits, I would say, is if you need more than 4 gigabytes of memory, because.
Or if you're working with large numbers.
Current 32-bit systems are, that's the cap, is 4 gigabytes of memory. It's all they can address. 64 bits gives you more of that. Or if you're doing scientific applications or, yeah, looking for oil, doing weather prediction.
Big numbers.
or if you just want to be cool. I mean, it's cool.
Yeah,
so.
It's cool to have a 64-bit processor. John, please, next story.
The next story is My Doom. I know, we were talking about this last week. Our very own Chris Dunphy had a... Well, tell us what happened. What you got?
Oh, I've just been getting flooded with emails with these 22-kilobyte attachments with all sorts of various extensions on them. You know, Doc, Screensaver, text files.
Right, SCR is Screensaver, TXT
is
text,
SCRs.
DLC is Doc, which is unusual because those are not executable files, and usually a virus...
Oh, SCR is. Screensaver file is.
Okay. But like, the text and the doc are not.
Yeah.
So what happens is it has two separate suffixes. You'll see it, there'll be a dot text, but then there's also a dot something else that's executable. So you'll be seeing something you think is a text file, but then if you double-click it, it isn't really an executable file. So, again, don't double-click things that you receive an email that you aren't expecting. Always double-check from the sender that, yeah, okay, you really did intend to send that.
And let's say you want to be a little geeky and you want to determine whether this file is going to be a virus. So one thing you can do is you open up your mail client that has the icon of the attachment, and you drag that to your desktop. Now, don't double-click it because you'll run it. Then you'll look at it, and if you click on it only once, so it's selected, and then you use the right mouse button and click on it and get to properties, you'll actually see whether it's an executable file or not. If it's an executable file, delete it, throw it away. It's not something you want to be running. If it's a zip file, it means that most likely inside it's an executable file, and you should probably delete it. In general, I would support people that are concerned about viruses through their email. I think that the best attack at this point is to contact your ISP and say that you really want virus protection on your email client. Basically, the ISP will run a scanning system that will remove that stuff. So any other suggestions for the geeks from the geeks in the room about dealing with viruses that come in on the email? John, you want to repeat some generic things to do?
Well, first of all, they don't work on Macintoshes. So
good
everyone
point.
Run out and buy a Macintosh.
Second,
pretty much don't accept attachments. If you're using Outlook, make sure that you have Outlook. Well, some versions of Outlook, I think it's been fixed in recent versions.
Won't execute them right away.
Yeah, they won't execute them. The older versions would, so make sure you turn it off. You don't want to double-click attachments you don't get that you aren't expecting because most likely they're not good. And if you get mail from a guy in Nigeria who's got this great deal, who's got a couple $1 million and he's willing to share it with you, it's a scam. Don't do it. Okay, enough said.
Sean, you want to add anything?
And Bill Gates doesn't want to give you money.
You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. The geeks this morning are Sean Cleveland, Miles Elam, John Tracy, and, of course, Chris Dunphy, who will be talking about handhelds in just a moment. You, Sean, you had some more about that?
Yeah, I was going to say maybe think about moving from Outlook to a different mail client.
Now, why is that important now that if you set up your Outlook specifically not to open attachments and stuff, is there other reasons to go to a different mail client?
Well, from what I understand, Outlook is just inherently more susceptible to certain types of files, right? Okay. So, and the other thing is the junk mail filters in Outlook
are okay, but they're not
as good as like Mozilla has.
Okay.
That's for sure.
So, and we talk about it all the time. We're talking about Thunderbird, which is
Thunderbird
Mozilla
is amazing.
Email client.
I mean, it just learns and it does a very good job. I'd say 99% of the emails that I get that it filters it are the ones that I want it to. It's just amazing.
And you can find Thunderbird for all operating systems, basically. If you go to mozilla.org, on the page will be preview technology, I think, Thunderbird. The current version for OS 10, you can't use keystrokes to enable it. You can't do like a command in to get a new message. So there's little errors in it. But in general, great mail client. We all highly recommend it.
I also have to say, if you do want to use Outlook, make sure you upgrade to Outlook 2003. It's much better in all ways than the older Outlooks, and it's much more secure. So if you got to use Outlook, get rid of Outlook XP and Outlook 2000 and get Outlook 2003.
Great. Thank you very much for that. I've lost where I am on news, but who's got news stories still? Miles? Let's go for Miles.
New beta of Java is coming out, version 1.5.
Yeah, for program. I thought 2.0 was out.
Yeah, that's a whole weird thing we used to call Java 2, and so this is actually Java 2 SDK version 1.5 beta.
Okay.
Yeah, doesn't that sound wonderful?
So Java 1.5 is coming out?
Right. Well, a beta has been released, okay. So people can actually use it now.
And what is it?
It is basically, it's the same language. It's a programming language. And it adds in the generic support, auto-boxing of primitives, syntactic sugar for loops, enumerated types.
I specifically warned you I was going to ask you what generics were.
Right.
So what are generics, and why is it important for an operating
system? When you shop at Safeway and you've got a name brand?
You know, the cheapest cigarettes? No, not that any of us smoke. But, Miles?
Say, for example, you have a data structure. You want to store a lot of records about people, for example, and you just want to throw them in there. To be able to hold them, you have to have something like a linked list or an array, something to be able to just say, I want it more, just keep adding them to it.
Raise your hand if you're following Miles. Cool, 50% of the geeks, go on.
Sorry, I was checking my email.
But Java always works from objects, from this base construct that they call object.
Okay.
However, it was really annoying that you had to throw in this thing that you knew exactly what it was. But when you pulled it out, it was always object, and you had to say, no, it's not really just a generic object. It's a specific thing that I have.
So the idea being that instead of restricting the operating system to consider all things as objects.
Or the language, yeah.
The language, rather. Sorry, thanks. You can now say, well, there are generic types, data structures like linked lists and
this
stuff.
This is an array for my records of people, rather than just
an array. So you don't have to specify as an object. Okay, well, cool. Yeah. That makes sense. And there's a lot of other features that are coming in. Now, the other response that I had when you mentioned this story to me a couple of days ago was that isn't Java dead because Microsoft's not including it in the operating system anymore? And you almost strangled me, except we were close to you. So I'm kind of risking my life here asking you that. But, Miles, isn't Java in some peril with Microsoft not installing it with their XP and with other operating systems now?
So far, not so much. Just because in terms of the desktop, yeah. On the desktop, Java is basically
hurting,
as far as I can tell.
Except for in a Mac environment and a Linux environment, and go on.
Well, there, it's coming with the operating system. However, on the server, it's still going by leaps and bounds. It's still going gangbusters, and .NET is having a hard time displacing Enterprise Java Beans, for example, and other Java technologies.
So, okay. And that makes sense. The largest web server out there is Apache, has been for years, and it, of course, if you're going to be doing server-side stuff with Apache, you're probably going to be doing using Java in the line of processing.
Not necessarily.
Well, you're Apache not going to be using .NET.
Right.
Right. That's the point.
Yeah, but Windows users are not locked out of Java content.
Right.
They can go download that client and install it themselves. Just go to sun.com.
Yeah, the only problem is the big download.
It is.
So once
download.
You do that big download, you're done. You never have to do
then you have Java, which... Now, of course, there's not a lot of applications out there that are Java applications, and when you install a Java application, lots of times it will request that you update your Java runtime environment. So people are still using Java on the machine.
Yeah. If you have a broadband connection, it's not a problem. If you're on dial-up, that download is sizable.
Substantial.
It's
and I'm not seeing websites with Java support. much anymore at all.
Oh, Java applets?
Yeah, applets.
Java applets are probably still going to work, I think. Don't Java applets work for IE?
I don't think so.
Well, the thing is that Java support in the browsers never went past 1.1.
Oh, okay.
Java 1.1, which was 6 years ago?
Yeah.
Seven?
So now online applications that would be kind of like an applet would probably be done in Flash or Director or something of that nature. All right, we've done a lot of news. Is there anything we need to do?
Yeah, yes, well, we Sean. Need to talk about Half-Life 2 is coming out this summer. Laugh all you want, but take my word, you'll be really excited when it does come out.
Okay.
It's supposed
Half-Life
to be
a 2
pretty
is a game?
Amazing game, yes. So,
and it's a first-person killing game, right?
Yes, it's first-person.
Sean, go home. The LAN party is over.
So everyone's waiting for Doom 3 from id, which is, you know, the next
Doom was
John
kind of the
Carmack game.
Shooter, right?
But that's not the truth. Everyone's waiting for Half-Life 2. So.
Okay. It's what's new and special about this 3D first-person reaction interface
game?
Well,
it's going to require some new hardware, I think, because the look of the game itself is going to be amazing because they're using higher resolution images, mm-hmm. you know, for the landscapes and everything. So
if people haven't seen these games, the first thing you're going to notice is that it's about shooting people. And that's, of course, pretty people don't like that. It's pretty antisocial feeling. But if you get past that level, the idea of this simulated world is really science fiction level stuff. We're talking about trees swaying in the breeze and clouds going over, and we're talking about seeing grass
but
move.
But you're shooting virtual polygons and
enemies.
Most people can differentiate that.
But the point I'm making is that from an artistic perspective, it's pretty. These things are pretty stunning, and they're getting more impressive.
And I must just follow up. The reason I'm saying this is going to be a very important game is because it's going to prompt people to upgrade their hardware. It's actually going to help the industry in some respect.
Gaming industry, in fact, is mostly the cutting edge of the technology. And
really people
does,
don't have a reason to upgrade their hardware right now.
Not everyone does do scientific applications at this point, right?
Well, you know, gaming has been pushing 3D hardware.
Entirely.
And this is going to be a big reason for people to do that.
I'd agree. Yeah. Miles.
Just to give a point of context, with the original Half-Life, which a game I dearly, truly loved, was kind of like being in the movie Alien. In some ways, it was if you had a dark room going around, you were scared.
Oh yeah,
it was an immersive
game. Is
like,
very scary.
The fight or flight response going on.
All right, we're gonna stop doing the news now because we're way into the show, and I really want to talk about handheld stuff that's happening. And this is, of course, newsworthy information. Last night we had a little gathering at John's house, and Chris came with his bag of gadgets, which he has strewn all over in front of him, which is pretty nice. And also the picture of all the gadgets. If you're kind of curious what they all look like together, up on geekspeak.org, just click on Chris's face and you'll see a picture with
28 gadgets.
And we're talking handheld devices, palm devices, phones. Are we talking phones?
Yeah, there's
a few phones in there.
Phones,
yeah.
Definitely.
Phones with cameras and phones without cameras and handheld devices with memory extensions and Bluetooth enabled and wireless and 802.11 and enabled. And we're talking about really expensive gadgets you can hold on you that will extend your ability to communicate and ability to retain information. So, PDAs, personal digital assistants, what's the newest and coolest thing, Chris?
There's just so much going on out there right now. The technology over the past year has gotten significantly cooler. A lot of what you're seeing is phones getting smart, phones becoming smartphones, where the phone and the PDAs are converging. So, one of the hot new things is like the Treo 600, which is taking the world by storm right now.
It's got a very small keyboard in the front, a really large screen comparable to most phones.
Yeah, so it's instead of a phone keypad with numbers, it's got a little text keypad so you can do emails and instant messages and you know do messaging back and forth. And then it's got a large screen for, here it is.
Stretch across the board. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And
the keyboard's actually something you could use.
Yeah, it's very worthwhile for doing quick emails. It gets rid of the need for something like a BlackBerry device for people who want something like that.
Mm-hmm. Do you use it ever to send information, send data?
The Treo 600? I haven't started carrying one myself. I'm hoping to get one this week. So I haven't gotten hands on one personally yet, but that's just one of our demo units.
And it's got a camera.
Yeah, it's got a camera. So you could like snap a quick picture and send it off in an email. And then it's really not much larger. Actually, it's probably smaller than most of the phones most people carry. So it replaces your cell phone. It is a cell phone. You could hold it up to your ear just like a cell phone. But it's also a full PDA. It runs all the Palm OS applications. It's got a camera, it's got email, and it's got a web browser. And it's available on pretty much all the carriers. It's a Sprint, AT&T, Singular, T-Mobile's about to have it. So basically all the cell carriers other than Verizon right now have the Treo 600 as an option.
It's a pretty nice looking phone. I like it. If you want to look at that, if you want to see a picture of this, just do a Google search for the Treo, and it's T-R-E-O.
Yeah.
600?
Yeah. Yeah, you could just go to palm1.com also.
It's very cool. Okay, so that's the coolest on the phone. Oh, what's the memory that it uses? What kind of memory stick? Is that a Sony memory stick?
No, that's an SD slot. So you could take SD cards for memory expansion.
Okay, cool. So it's not just memory. It's also, is it an interface for other things like peripherals? Or does it really not need peripherals because it's so
Eventually, you will be able to support peripherals. You'll be able to get little, well, you can get cameras that would plug in here, but it's kind of redundant because you already have a camera.
Right.
And they're working on drivers, so you'll be able to get an 802.11 card so that, you know, when you're at home, you can actually access the net, not just via the cell phone network, but also via your wireless
line. That makes sense. Now, that phone, it uses a Palm operating system,
yeah,
correct?
Yeah, this is a Palm operating system.
Okay, and the sound now is going to just pull us right over to John. John, what do you have in front of you that is Chris's?
Chris
is going to snag it.
I have the Zodiac, which just crashed. is this a Microsoft device?
No, this is actually a running Palm OS.
We do have crashing Microsoft devices in here. We'll talk about it in a second, though. But let's talk about this device. What is it? What is it?
So the Zodiac here is, I think John probably ran one of the things from the wrong card, hopefully. This is the first combination PDA and a gaming device. So this is like, you know, in a sense, a PlayStation in your pocket, and it's also a full Palm OS device.
And it has a huge screen for its size.
Yeah, here's
that's it, playing a game? Go ahead.
This is the game.
Pull up to the mic.
Okay. So here's, you can hear the music going. I'm starting a race. It's got a 3D graphics. It's the first handheld with actually an analog joystick on the side here. So you can see this is actually a real analog control. So depending
very cool.
how hard you press, you can actually do real steering. It's laid out with like a gamepad. You got the buttons in the right place. It's also one of the first devices with the, you know, check out the 3D here.
Yeah, turn it on the radio. The 3D is amazing.
Can you bring that device up to the microphone while it's playing?
There we go. So
that's an engine of a car running.
Yeah. Oh, and then just driving, get the turbo boost, jumping over the wall, jumping through a ring of fire.
Hey, everyone now can pretend like someone's playing a game right behind them. How fun is that? Okay, enough of the sound. Thank you. Yeah. So, in general, this is like a multimedia. It's kind of you say it's equivalent to a PlayStation, but it's not to that level. It doesn't have like video out to a television screen, right?
Actually, there are accessories that probably would eventually give it that. But this is designed to carry with you, and it gives you your full organizer. They actually ship it with a scientific calculator. So for a student, it's you can do all the student stuff. You can read your books on it. You can do your scientific graphing calculator stuff, and then you got games as well, and you got all the Palm OS practical applications.
This is not a phone though, right?
This is not a phone, but it has Bluetooth in it, so it can talk to a phone and go online via and browse the web via your phone.
Okay.
And then it also has the media stuff, so it's got a photo albums that you can carry around all your pictures. It's got an MP3 player, and then it's got a movie player, so you can.
And it's got two memory extension slots, so you can put films on it.
So you can. It's one of the first devices that actually has a dual SD slots, so you can have lots of expansion.
And this thing is, what's the size of that? Not dimensions, measurement dimensions, but what is it equivalent to? It fits in a breast pocket. Yeah, it fits perfectly in a button-up shirt breast pocket, which is a pretty small device, really.
Yeah.
It's about a half inch thick. Mm-hmm. It's a small, very pretty, large screen, fun thing to play with.
Yeah, this is the Tapwave Zodiac 2, the old Tapwave Zodiac, and. And it's a lot of device for the money. It's really, really.
What is the money on this thing?
It's $299.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, it's a Palm device.
And it's full Palm OS. It's running the latest OS, and it's also there's a second model for $399 that's the first Palm OS device with 128 megs of memory. So.
And now, if really you look at that, that's a little bit more expensive than a console system like your Xbox or GameCube.
Right. That's true.
So,
but you can carry it with you, and it's a PDA.
And the Xbox doesn't come with a screen.
Okay. So. Those are cool. Two cool things. A really neat phone, and then this really cool like handheld PDA gaming thing. Let's talk about some failures. You're wearing one. You've got two watches on, actually. Yes. One is not out yet. It's a Palm one. Let's talk about that. That's not a failure.
It's not out yet. It hasn't come to market, so in a sense, it was supposed to come out last summer. They've delayed it for a year.
And you're one of the 15 people in the world that actually wears
it. So this is a full. It's the Fossil Wrist PDA by Fossil. It's
personal digital assistant.
Yeah. So it's running Palm OS. It displays the time, but when you press the button on the side, it actually gives you the Palm OS screen, and then out of the little wristband, out of the
wristband
band at the bottom, you can pull out a little stylus, and you can do on-screen handwriting. I keep what I use it for is I
You keep your addresses in?
I keep my addresses on it, but I also keep the BART and Caltrain schedule, so I could just, like, look at my wrist and know when the next BART train is, because I live in San Francisco and I commute that way a lot.
Okay.
And so it's ultra convenient to have that stuff with you on your wrist.
And you personally wouldn't use that watch for looking at phone numbers to call, because you have another PDA that connects to your phone that would auto-dial it for you.
Yes.
So there's no reason to use your... But most people that don't have 30 devices in their bag would use that to look up phone numbers. So you could be looking up the phone number. It holds on the screen while you're dialing it with, you know, the same hand even.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty cool device, and you can hold all your addresses on it and all your calendar information.
It's a brick, though.
It's big for a watch.
It's like a Dick Tracy watch.
It looks just like a Dick Tracy watch. It's really kind of cool in that respect.
I think it's kind of cool looking. I've had a lot of compliments on just the style of this watch and people. And then the watch face has changed, so you can cycle through different looks, like analog or digital.
So if you're getting dressed up, you can
change, dial through the face. It's like a little more.
And it does have a really nice analog
analog
watch, which I like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's quite nice. Okay, the other wrist. Yes, he has two watches. Why not? The other wrist has one of these new, we hear about a lot, Microsoft technology. What's the technology called?
They're calling it MSN Direct. Okay. This is this is actually another watch made by Fossil. This is the Fossil MSN Direct watch, and there's also Suunto, and there'll be other watchmakers who are making this design. But it's a design from Microsoft.
But this watch, this is not a PDA. This is a watch and like a data collection thing using.
Yeah. This watch can't put your own programs on it like the other one. You can't get the BART schedule. You can't do other things like this. But what you can do is you have to pay $60 a year to Microsoft to subscribe to the service, and then it uses an FM subcarrier that's on Clear Channel, so that big FM monopoly that's partnered with the operating system monopoly to broadcast down data in the background.
Weather, news stories.
And so your watch, A, it automatically gets the time set, and then B, it automatically gets like the top news headlines and the weather forecast and the stock tickers, and it's just, you look at your watch, it's like, oh, hey, my stock's going down today. That's nice.
And we'll talk more about that watch, and it's not all peaches and cream, in just a second.
Okay.
This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue, and online at santacruzelectronics.com. If you have questions or comments regarding portable devices, please use the numbers 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You can, of course, also visit geekspeak.org, click on the Geeks, and then send a message. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. You are listening to Geekspeak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me, John Tracy, Sean Cleveland, Miles Elam, and our portable expert, Chris Dunphy. This program is supported by a grant from Cruise.io, providing internet services including DSL, spam filters, PHP, MySQL. Now with nationwide access, information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. We're in the middle of the show of GeekSpeak Hour, and Chris, using your right hand, can you tell me the time with that amazing Microsoft watch?
The Microsoft watch says that it's 12:20 a.m. on January 1st.
What year?
Good question. I'm not sure it even knows.
Okay, so basically it's very wrong. Why is it wrong? You don't set that watch?
It seems like 20 minutes ago it crashed, and it hasn't reset the time from the network yet.
Let me repeat that just for everybody that's listening. Your Microsoft watch crashed.
Yes, indeed.
This must be a rare event.
I was hoping so, but it's crashed three or four times in the last day. Or it loses the time.
Loses the time. So your watch becomes not a watch, but a... This device on your wrist.
I first noticed this the other day. I was like, late for a meeting. I looked down at my wrist and I'm like, okay. Had to go fumble for one of my other devices to check the time.
One of your other 20 devices to check the time, huh? So the when we heard about this last night, none of us even laughed about it, which is funny in itself because
I was laughing.
It's sad.
None of us were surprised about it.
Well, I don't know if we laughed. We kind of were just like, that's funny. But it's not. I mean, it's sad. Microsoft releases a technology, a whole infrastructure around the idea of a personal news thing on your wrist, which is a watch. Specifically, it's a watch with other features. But since it crashes, it's not really a timepiece at all. It's not a chronometer of any effect. So that's just sad. Miles, you did laugh?
And the other...
I'm crying on the inside.
The other thing about watch is it has the news headlines, and... Yeah, it gives you, like, I looked at my wrist right now, and it says, Good Samaritan Comes. And then, okay, I have to fumble and find out. Good Samaritan comes forward. The man who saved two people from a... Press another button. Burning crash car this week talks with NBC 11 News.
Now, is that all the information?
And that's it. So if I'm interested in knowing more, there's nothing more there. And, you know, A, and then, like, why are they wasting space on my wrist to tell me that some guy's going to talk to NBC 11 News? There's, like, no filtering of like, giving you... I would really think it'd be cool if I could find out, like, hey, the World Trade Center fell down on my wrist instantly.
Right.
I don't care about somebody talking to NBC 11 News, and I had to hit five buttons to find that out. And if I did care, I couldn't get more information. There's no way to say, tell me more.
And it doesn't tell you the time because it crashes. John, you're going to have to turn that sound down on that thing. Sorry. John's playing that really cool device we were talking about in just a second. Oh, sorry, John. It's distracting to have that game. I feel like there's a 14-year-old behind me playing a game. In any case, Chris, so the watch's extra features, which make it more compelling than a watch that you could get for $10 at a store. By the way, how much is that watch?
I believe it's about $170.
Okay, so, but it's not really a watch.
And then $60 a year because you have to subscribe
for the service that gives you news headlines and the first sentence of the news story if you spend the time to read it. Okay, it does do something that conceptually sold the idea, I guess, to Microsoft or made the Microsoft release, and that is, it uses an FM subcarrier to transmit the news information. So therefore, because it's a regional based, unlike the internet, since it's regional based. You really can get local news.
Right.
So yesterday you found out about the mayor, for example.
It gets your local weather forecast.
Okay.
Also, so I can bring up the weather, and let's see if it has Santa Cruz weather.
He's now...
Weather, no local weather. So when it crashed, it lost the weather.
Okay. So now you got to wait for it to come in.
Yeah, so and it doesn't seem to be getting a signal at all right now, so yeah, maybe we won't get any weather.
Okay, so let's say it does give you, you know, little raindrops for tomorrow. Does it tell you more than that it's going to rain tomorrow?
Well, so it gives you, like, the day's highs and lows, and then a three-day forecast with highs and lows, and a little graphic symbol that says, you know, sunny or rain or... You know, thunderstorms, but it doesn't actually, again, you want to know more details, like, oh, it's going to rain tomorrow. Is it going to be a little drizzle in the morning? Is it going to rain all day? You know, is it a chance of rain? Is it guaranteed to rain? You want to know so you can prepare, but then there's no more information. So again,
So then if you want that information and you're moving around, you're going to have to have some kind of other device or maybe, you know, like a newspaper. I know that's kind of strange, but you're going to have something else to subsidize this watch. And the watch... Right now, the version you have, which of course is the first generation, whatever, it crashes, so it's not really good for a timepiece. So basically, don't buy a Microsoft watch right now. Don't do it. It's just not a good idea. It's almost as bad an idea as running the Microsoft OS. No, I'm just kidding. So basically, that watch is a failure. Do you have any other bombs on the desk of devices that just don't work real well?
Let's see. There's...
What's your least favorite Apple watch?
Here is. I just brought the case for it because I had loaned out the device to somebody. But this is the Nokia N-Gage, which is Nokia's idea of a gaming phone.
Yes. I
call it the taco phone because Nokia, in their wisdom, put the speaker and microphone on the side. So when you hold it to your head, it's like you're holding holding a taco to your head.
It's on edge instead of on.
You hold it on edge, and it's this big rounded taco shaped thing. So it's like you're holding a taco to your head.
Now, there's nothing wrong when you have that up there.
Maybe if you're playing an ocean game.
There's nothing wrong with having a taco on your head. I mean, come on. So besides the taco effect of using a phone, I mean, it is a phone. The other device that's a game system isn't a phone. So this is a phone and a game system.
Yeah. The other thing Nokia really messed up with this is to change the game that you're playing. So the games come on little SD card cartridges or MMC card cartridges. I wish I had the phone here so I could show you. You have to actually take the back cover off, take the battery out, slide a little thing, pull out the game, put in the other game, slide it in, and reassemble the whole device. You can't just, like, pop it in and out.
Wow, so it's not something you can do on the train kind of
thing. No, you'd like, lose your battery, and your phone would be ruined. Uh-huh. And then the phone takes 30 seconds to reboot, and then you could play the game that you wanted to play. And,
bad form.
It's like everybody who looks at this is like, what on earth was Nokia thinking with this device?
And it's interesting because Nokia actually is, normally their phones have great interfaces. I really, for a simple phone with not a lot of bells and whistles really, the earlier Nokias were great phones. And they're still pretty good phones. I think the interfaces are really nice on them. But that is a complete disaster.
The Nokia N-Gage is definitely something to avoid.
Don't buy the N-Gage from Nokia. Don't buy the Microsoft Watch yet. Okay, let's talk about another cool device. And I'm also going to invite people, if you have questions or comments about portable devices. We have an email, is that right?
Yeah, you want
good, we'll do that
question?
In just a second. The phone number, 476-2800, or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You can go online like this guest that we're about to interface with, geekspeak.org, click on the Geeks, then click on Send a Message. John, if you'd read that as if you were the person asking the question, that'd be great.
I have no idea what his voice sounds like, so
okay.
Just use mine.
All right.
This is from John Etrim. Do you know of any handhelds that have USB host capability that would work with a USB hard drive? I have a little USB box that holds a laptop drive and has a compact flash slot and a copy button. I use it to hold photos on vacations. It has no screen to either verify the photos truly downloaded or to go back through them and review my photos for the next day's shooting. I looked around a bit, and the devices that have host capability seem to have been intended for mice and keyboards. Thanks for the advice, John.
Okay, cool. So the person has a small USB portable device, and it has a flash card reader. You plug in, you push a button, it empties all the photos from the flash card onto the hard drive, then you pull it back out. If you're on vacation, that's all you have. You hope, before you erase that flash card and put it back in your or put it back in your camera and erase it, that the data actually got on there. And he wants some way to verify that that USB hard drive, that external USB hard drive, has his photos on there before he erases them on his camera. Is there a device that can do that?
As you said, there are a couple pocket PC models that have USB host support, but I think they're only using it for keyboards right now. I haven't heard of whether or not they will support mounting a drive. That's a specific profile that you need to support. So you have to have the hardware capability of having the port. And there are no Palmolive devices with USB host port. There are just a small handful of pocket PCs that have USB host capability, but then the second thing is having the driver to support that. So that's a USB client. So this is how you hook. John held up one of the devices and said, "Hey, there's USB right there on the side." But that's how there's two different ways the USB can be, either one end or the other. It can either be acting like the PC or the peripheral. All PDAs act as a USB peripheral, and a few of them can act as the PC to hook other peripherals up to. And you know, that's a feature that'll probably be much more developed over the next few years, but right now is really not very practical.
What would be great, of course, is, well, for at least this person that has this case, USB hard drive with a screen on it and a little toggle button. You can just go through the images.
Yeah.
And I can't think of anything that would do it for you except for the cheapest laptop you could possibly get. But, of course, then you're holding the whole laptop with you. And then, of course, why do you need the USB device in the first place? Hey, wow, imagine that. Chris is making noise. Something beeped.
We're looking at this plethora of devices trying to figure out which one's talking.
Okay, what is it, the one? What one did it beep? Did beep?
This was my Tungsten 3, which is actually my main personal device.
And this is made by Palm Hardware, or
yeah,
Palm.
Yeah, this is the Palm 1 Tungsten 3, and it's letting me know that, it's 10:45, and I'm skipping a meeting that's at 11. So it's reminding me of something I'm not going to.
So basically, all the plethora of stuff you have out there is because you work for Palm Source and you're the competitive analysis person.
Right.
And right now, for us, for all the KOSP listeners out here, you're here and skipping your meeting, skipping your work to talk about these devices. Chris, thanks for doing that.
This is so much cooler than work. why don't we have like a 24-hour GeekSpeak marathon?
As long as we'd have audience. Does anyone want to listen to a 24-hour
marathon? Or actually, GeekSpeak, 365 days a year, 7 days a week, you know, 24/7 nonstop.
You're listening to GeekSpeak. My name's Lyle Troxell. The geeks this morning are Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, and John Tracy. And those three geeks are just playing with devices the entire show, so that's why they're not talking as much. Chris Dunphy, of course, is here from Palm Source. He's one of our remote geeks, portable geek expert. You're welcome to call in with questions, comments, or, of course, use the website to ask any questions you have about getting a device. Like, you know, call in and say, I am a student with $50 and I want to know what to do. You're welcome to do that. Anything you might want to ask about portable devices, you're welcome to do so. And to do that, 476-2800 in the 831 area code, or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. Chris, that Palm device, which is a Palm hardware, and Palm is now two companies, right?
Yeah, so there's Palm, what used to be Palm, and you can go to palm.com and you'll see it's, you know, split in half now. There's Palm Source, which makes the operating system and the software, and Palm One, which makes the hardware. So if you have a, you know, a Palm 5, and then Palm 1 actually merged with Handspring. So Palm Hardware and Handspring hardware is now all under Palm 1. And then Palm Source, we make the software that Palm uses, that Sony uses, that Samsung uses, that Kyocera uses.
That like 50% of the devices on the desk.
Yeah.
Use, right?
So I do have a lot of the Microsoft powered devices here.
So
too,
what's the competitor for Palm Source?
So there's our big competitors are Microsoft's Pocket PC and Microsoft's smartphone operating system, and then there's a European operating system called Symbian that's coming out in a lot of phones now, And then there's...
What about CE, Microsoft CE?
So Windows CE is Microsoft's... Windows is an embedded operating system for Microsoft. That is the core of Pocket PC. Pocket PC is a full platform on top of it. Okay. Windows CE is kind of like just Lego blocks.
Okay.
It's you can build things out of it. One of the things they built out of Windows CE is Pocket PC.
And another Pocket PC is a software.
Yeah, Pocket PC is a full software platform equivalent to Palm. What we saw.
When you're using, I mean, I know a lot about Palm because that was the first PD. Well, that wasn't the first PDA, but it was the first PDA I was using a lot. And I understand the operating system. It's relatively simple. It's a baseline operating system that manages your handwriting recognition, manages launching of other applications and time setting of things, but basically being able to run your address book and your calendar and your task list, and there's one other I'm missing.
There's memos. One of the
memos.
Yeah.
So there's kind of some four basic applications that really are great portable digital assistants. Kind of the core of portable digital assistants is those applications having all your address books with you. So that's Palm, in general, Palm Source, I should say. But what can you do with CE that's different than that? Pocket PC.
They basically provide, they're basically providing the same sort of enabling infrastructure, and then the goal of each operating system is to enable our hardware licensees, both ours and Microsoft's, to make interesting, cool devices, and then to enable software developers to write applications that run on those devices in a compatible way.
Miles?
I'm sorry, did you just say enabling infrastructure with a straight face?
Maybe.
No. He does speeches at trade shows, so that's a convention.
Like, who talks like that?
I said enable our licensees to build stuff.
Yeah, basically he's saying he makes sure that the hardware can do
things.
No,
I know what it means. Just the corporate speak is just fucking
just because you're not as corporate as him. Actually, wait, Miles, you don't have a job.
Well, but still. Why are you going to bring up old stuff?
That's not old. You still don't have a job. Okay. that's a bad thing at all. Chris... CE also, or I'm sorry, I've stuck CE, but it's Pocket PC by Microsoft, is more emulation of a Windows environment. Like, it has a start button, and you can run applications like Word, for example.
Yeah, they have some of the same elements from the that they brought down from Windows to make it look similar. So they do have a start button on the Pocket PCs. They have something they call Pocket Word, which is actually has nothing to do with desktop Word. It's not particularly compatible at all. There's actually most of the Palm OS devices, like the Tungsten 3 I was just using here, has on it Documents2Go built into the ROM that is Word and Excel compatible, and actually is more Word and Excel compatible than Pocket Word and Pocket Excel that Microsoft sells or comes with Pocket PC. So we always get a laugh that the Palm OS devices are more Word and Excel compatible than the Pocket PCs are.
Really? That's kind of weird.
Yeah, Microsoft hasn't fixed that one yet. We keep wondering why.
So you really can read your stuff on Palm devices, your Excel sheets and your Word documents.
A device like the Tungsten 3 that has the let me show the screen is high res, so you can bring up, like, here's a spreadsheet I made of Caltrain times to figure out my commuting, and you can open it up and make the screen go widescreen. So you've got I've got 18 lines of spreadsheet down and then A through P across. You know, it's like, you know, A through H, so it's like a huge spreadsheet view here. And
so he's taking it from portrait to landscape.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah,
so you can use an Excel spreadsheet, basically. Or you can look at a spreadsheet.
You could edit. You could actually work on the spreadsheet, not just view it. So
very cool.
It's actually really useful.
And so the other thing I noticed about Pocket PC devices is that, and this is the thing that I don't particularly like in this handheld, is that there's this whole... concept that it's doing. There's a lot of features. We've actually had discussions about this on the show. Computers have a lot of capabilities, so people have a lot of different applications, and therefore the interface to the to the computer itself has to have an ability to launch a lot of applications. So in Macintosh, for example, you'll open up the hard drive and you find a folder called Applications. There's a whole bunch of things in there listed. And then in Windows, you have the Start button down at the bottom left. You click on that, and you go to Programs, and you have a whole bunch of things listed. Well, those things are great on a computer when you have a lot of needs for stuff. But when you have a situation where you are on the run, you're on a train, for example, and you want to look up someone's phone number or you want to look at meetings that are happening, you don't really need all those applications. A subset of those applications are really convenient, and a fast way to get to them makes a lot of sense. So, like, most Palm hardware, it might be enforced by Palm, I'm not sure, Palm Source, but I'm not really sure, maybe just the way people are doing it, is that there's, like, five buttons on it, and one of the buttons is your calendar, and one of them is your address book. And that kind of interface really makes sense to me for a small device. But, of course, we're seeing now these devices have phones in them. I mean, have, you know, our phones, also our cameras. So you're going to see more need for people to have a plethora of things, if you will, available, and therefore more menu items. So maybe that's why a Pocket PC has that PC emulation. But I'm not sure I like it, personally. Okay, what's the next cool device?
What else is here? Other cool
things. What's that clay? Yeah, the white clay, the silver.
This is like, you know, imagine a laptop that was shrunk down that would fit in your shirt pocket. It says, you know,
pack of playing cards about that size, a little wider.
You open it up and there's it's like a little clamshell. You open it up and there's a screen, a 320x40 resolution screen, and then a full little thumb keyboard. And then the screen can flip around and go back to be down like a tablet, regular PDA size.
And it's running Palm OS, so it has a handheld recognition.
And it has the handheld recognition and the stylus, and also as well as the keyboard. And this actually has both Bluetooth and Wi-Fi built in, so it's got two different kinds of wireless network.
Okay, now isn't that one of the coolest devices? I mean, that's
this is a very cool device actually. It also has a camera that can record stills and movies.
Okay, so when you're done with that one, I want that. How much did that run?
I think this is about it's a little bit over $500.
That's pretty expensive.
Yeah, it's a little pricey.
Yeah, it is a digital camera. Now, the digital camera, I'm assuming, is not like a major megapixel digital camera.
No, it's just a VGA resolution, so it's less than a megapixel.
Television screen resolution.
Yeah, television screen resolution, handy for quick snapshots.
And this is no longer called a PDA. It's a PEO, Personal Entertainment Organizer.
Sony's been calling their devices for a while Personal Entertainment Organizers, because Sony's really focused on the multimedia side of things.
All right. Well, We're having some technical problems today with phones, unfortunately, and I think I'm going to go ahead and see if we have Jose from Watsonville with us on GeekSpeak. Jose, are you with us today? Yes?
Hey.
Hi. Can you go ahead and speak up, Jose?
Yeah, I could speak up.
Great. What's your question, comment?
Well, it's a very basic question, but it stumped me, and I was listening to you guys, so I figured I'd go ahead and give you a call. It's as simple as my monitor on my PC just completely failing, and I'm in the process of trying to figure out if it's a hardware or software problem, because I've tried at least switch my current monitor with another monitor just to see if I could get the screen to even turn on.
Okay.
That it didn't have the current software. The problem that I'm facing is if it in fact is like a software issue, and again, I don't know what else it could be, because at least the monitor has been working perfectly.
Okay, well, I'm going to stop you for just a second, because it's a little hard to hear you. And first off, it's not a software problem.
Okay.
And the reason it's not a software problem is the first concern of any computer is to display the information to the user a user interface.
Okay.
And the primary user interface for computers is a screen. So you got like Microsoft operating system. If there's a serious problem on the machine, it'll reboot a couple times, and then it'll put you in this safe mode. And the primary reason for the safe mode is to make everything simple so you can see what's going on.
Okay.
So that's first off. And are you talking about a Windows machine?
Yeah.
Okay, then we'll just stick with that. When you first start the computer, is there anything ever happen on the screen?
Nothing.
Okay. And this just happened one day? It just stopped working like this?
It happened about a week ago, and the screen did not turn on, and then it turned itself on after a period of time. I don't know how long it passed, but my wife called me and said that the monitor was working once again.
Okay. And then, is that a little bit later than, like, later in the day or something?
Yeah.
Okay. So it was probably temperature changes in the room or something that was causing it. I would say that this is a hardware problem, but have you tried to make sure the plugs are all plugged in securely,
and
you've made sure you made sure the power is there. Is there a power light on the monitor?
There is.
Okay, and that comes on and off when you turn it on and off.
It's when I turn the system down off. Obviously, it turns off, but it's currently the system, the computer's on, and the monitor light is on, but nothing's on the screen.
Okay, and you've tried using the power button of the monitor?
Yes.
Okay. What kind of PC is this? Do you like buy a Dell or something?
It's a Compaq.
A Compaq. Okay. Yeah, you basically have a dead monitor. Anybody else agree with that, disagree with that?
A monitor is kind of like, in a sense, almost like a light bulb, and they do burn out, and okay. They do have problems in time. So the one thing to get is, if you can borrow a monitor from a friend, plug it into your computer, and I bet your computer works just fine.
Yeah.
That's what I've tried, and that's the problem. Nothing came on the...
you tried a second monitor?
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then, cool. The next
thing
is...
Then it's your graphics card.
Did you use the same cable to plug into the monitor?
No, I use the cable off of the...
Check the wires, the pins, and the cable.
And no, it's a new cable. So, you're saying at the back of the memory card. Well, let's get there in just a second.
It's a new cable.
The new monitor that came in, you made sure that was plugged in. You had a light on that, right?
Correct.
Okay. So, the problem is your video card, most likely. And what's probably happened is the video card has unseated itself. If not, then you've got to replace your video card. That's okay. The basic concept. Unfortunately, I can't get more details for you on that.
Do you have someone you could recommend me to?
You can go to Santa Cruz Electronics. Where are you located?
Watsonville.
Okay, well, go to your local local electronics shop. Santa Cruz Electronics is a great little shop in Santa Cruz. They do services. They also have a whole bunch of business cards. You could call Santa Cruz Electronics of Santa Cruz and ask if they know any Watsonville people.
Or if you have access to a video card,
yes.
Another one you can try.
And if you're a PC person or a computer repair person that does that kind of line of work in the listening area ship of Central Coast of California, you're welcome to send us go to geekspeak.org and let us know you exist. We'll start collecting that so that people... like Jose from Watsonville can find someone to service their computer. Jose, good luck with your problem.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, bye.
And we're not going to be able to get to Lynn today on GeekSpeak, unfortunately. Sorry about the lack of computer technical support on GeekSpeak. But Chris, thanks for coming and showing us your stuff.
I love it. This is so much fun. I really want to come down more often.
This program is supported by a grant from Seagate Technology. Seagate is a worldwide supplier of disk drives for PCs and servers and innovations for products like the Microsoft Xbox, digital video recorders, and digital jukeboxes. Information is at Seagate.com. Our geeks today were Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, John Tracy, and, of course, Chris Dunphy. Our producer is Maggie Cleveland. Thank you all for participating in GeekSpeak. To those of you that called in, thank you for making GeekSpeak what it is. Without you, well, it wouldn't be GeekSpeak. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KVDH San Arto, or on the web at kusp.org. For GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxell. Stay tuned right now for Fine Print.